Hello and welcome into this week's episode of You Seem Interesting. I'm your host, Danny Rouillet. You're the best. Thank you so much for listening to this little project that we like to do. It's fun. It's fun for me to record this thing, have it shot to your phone where it just kind of sits there chilling so hard. Poolside, Mai Tai, drink, umbrella in it, you hit play, and we deliver. Whatever this is, we're delivering it to you. So thank you guys for checking out the show. Whenever you're doing it, it's awesome. Take us with you. All the cool podcasting platforms you can be on, we on them. Whether it's Google Play or, I don't know, whatever tickles your pickle, man. Whatever butters the biscuit, whatever raises the dough. We're on Amazon Music and Apple Pods and all that fancy stuff. So wherever you can find us. If you just want to support the show, that's awesome too. Patreon.com/FunnyDanny for that. Always appreciate you guys taking an interest in supporting our projects. Writing columns, all sorts of tiers for you. However you want to get involved, you can be involved. You support for long enough, you get merch. That's how it goes. It's what we do. My guest this week is my pal Lydia Slaby. And if that name sounds familiar to you, Slaby, it's because I had her husband, Michael Slaby, on this past week. We're breaking ground here. We're doing our first husband and wife tandem. So I had Michael first. He just released his book. My guest this week, Lydia Slaby, released her book several years ago. So this is old hat for her. She's probably sitting back, arms folded, laughing at Michael as he struggles through the process of promoting his book and doing interviews with jerks like me and everything else. She's already been through this before. And speaking of being through it, her story's incredible. And she wrote a book about it. And that's kind of what I want to talk about today. But before we do, it's time, as we always do around this time, for the strangest gimmick in all of podcasting.
It is once again time for the strangest gimmick in all of podcasting. Moderately passable celebrity impression asking you for money.
Oh, baby, drink some water. That's right. Go to patreon.com/funnydanny. Oh, drink some water, babe. I said drink some water already. I'm confused on my impressions. Oh, that's my Sherman. Always hungry. Like a little Hercules. Hercules. So there you have it. I did Mama Clump from The Clumps or Meet the Nutty Professors, whichever one they called the sequel. I can't remember if I've done that one or not, to be honest with you. If I have, that's my bad. If you call me out on it, that's cool, at @interest_pod on Twitter. And if you're listening to us on patreon.com/funnydanny, you have every right to complain. So appreciate it. Let's talk about my guest this week, Lydia Slaby. And again, as I said, if that name sounds familiar to you, I had her husband on last week, right? So let's rewind many years ago while they're living together in Chicago, okay? Michael, I've already kind of referenced this, and if you listen to last week's episode, he's doing amazing work on the Obama campaign and then subsequent re-election campaign. He's doing innovative stuff. He's engaging a whole group of people that have never been engaged before. They move Obama from kind of, you know, middle of the pack, maybe outside looking in of the sort of center of the Democratic Party, guy that wouldn't have gotten out of the primary, probably in most other elections, to forefront, then candidate, and then sweeping in to office. An amazing achievement. And Michael's one of those hugely under the radar for a lot of people, but instrumental folks while that's happening. While Michael's doing that, Lydia's kicking ass in her own career. She's a super triple high-powered lawyer who just casually picked up an extra degree because she was in Chicago. She's like, well, it's a Tuesday and it's kind of cloudy. I'll just go to Northwestern and pick up like another degree. She's already worked in Governor Patrick's office in Massachusetts and has been everywhere, right? And she studied design at Harvard and has, you know, has all sorts of degrees, like too many degrees, honestly, right? Well, all of a sudden, as their world is sort of moving and everyone's going at light speed, she gets a cancer diagnosis, right? So that's a familiar experience for a lot of folks, unfortunately. Cancer touches so many lives. Around 1.8 million last year in 2020, folks in America were diagnosed with cancer. And it certainly affected my family. My grandmother died a couple days after I was born of breast cancer. My aunt had breast cancer. A different aunt had bone cancer. It's certainly something that has, again, affected us. My first radio co-host just finished his treatments for cancer. And he, hopefully, knock on wood, is emerging from those on the other side doing well. Lydia, my pal from high school, confronted cancer and beat it. So not only does Lydia and Michael are sort of forced to take on this challenge, right, so many years ago, and a lot of people have done that. Well, Lydia then takes extra steps and she does more. And she writes a book called Wait, It Gets Worse. And it focuses on her, you know, not her kind of journey of of acceptance and dealing with this reality and understanding that it's not going anywhere. So what are we going to do about it? We're going to confront it. We're going to beat this thing. And it's an amazing read, honestly. And she's just so impressive to me. Has always been impressive to me. Always been fierce and competitive and funny and sort of just a take no nonsense kind of person. And I've always really been impressed with that. But Lydia now and her Michael, again, just through some family stuff, have relocated to middle of the nowhere, place called Rhinebeck, New York, which is a town of tens of people. And Lydia's running for public office in Rhinebeck, New York, with all this incredible big city experience. It honestly sounds like a Hollywood script. You know, it's like a modern day updated version of like a Doc Hollywood or something to that effect. And it's really funny to think about it, but she's just, you know, wants to use some of her vast experience, both in public office and, you know, on the other side of things as a high-powered attorney in Chicago to sort of help local folks. And she's sort of, has the call, and here she comes. And she's running for re-election, so we'll talk about that in a little bit. But there's plenty to chat about. That's not a word, chack. Well, could you imagine if you talked and chatted, you'd be chacking. Boom, I invented it. That's trademark. Anyway, plenty to chat about with Lydia, and there's a wide range of things I want to get to with her. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation or my chat with Lydia Slaby. Excited about my guest this week, my friend Lydia Slaby is going to hop on. If that name sounds familiar, it's because I had her worst half on last week, Michael Slaby. It's my first husband and wife guest tandem. Excited to have you, Lydia. What's going on? How you doing?
I'm doing so well. Thanks, Danny, for having me.
It is a pleasure. So your husband just released his book, which I'm excited to check out. He was a great guest this past week. But you are sort of a veteran of this author game. How much have you kind of lorded that over him in the sense that, hey, I've already done this book thing. You novice, you first timer, you rube. If you need any tips, come find me in the solarium.
Well, I mean, you know me and you know Michael. And so, like, I'm very good at lording and he's very good at ignoring. But there was like moments of, you know, calm down, this is just the process, or like, hey, maybe you should think about doing this, or, you know, gee, really, like, editors do edit, you have to take some of their edits because you're not a professional author and they are professional books editors. So, you know, there's like aspects of that, but really, you know, writing a book is just a flow process. And then getting the book out, you just kind of have to succumb to the professionals.
Your book, When It Gets Worse, it's incredible. I think the courage that it takes to go, not only am I going to confront this reality, not only am I going to sort of deal with it as best I can and understand that this is the challenge in front of me, but then to express it and to write about it and to be as reflective and sort of open about that experience, I think it's pretty incredible, Lydia. So I'd love for you to speak to that process, if you don't mind.
Oh, thanks, Danny. It's a combination of a lot of therapy and just kind of, I think, my natural personality of sharing too much. I wrote a book. It came out a couple of years ago, and it was about my battle with cancer, but it was really about more just when life hands you a really brutal moment, how to, instead of fighting against it, just kind of learn to roll with it, which was incredibly difficult for someone with my control freak personality. But half of the my most interesting memoirs that I have ever read and my most interesting fiction that I've ever read, you know, don't just tell the story of someone's life. They get into what they were feeling and thinking. And, you know, as humans, we can tell when people are bullshitting us. And so I was like, well, if I'm going to judge an author harshly for whitewashing a particular moment in their life, then I better be pretty clear that I'm not doing it to myself. And so, yeah, it took a long time and it took a lot of edits and it took Michael, frankly, engaging a lot because a good portion of the story involves my relationship with him. And I didn't want to paint it unfairly, but yeah, it was a lot. There were moments in the book where I was seeing my therapist 3 times a week, and I usually see her like once a month. So, it was a lot. But thank you for recognizing that. I appreciate it.
Well, of course. Well, you guys are in Chicago, and that's kind of the epicenter of this to me, and part of your story.
Yeah.
Michael's doing incredible work with the Obama campaign, and sort of he was modest about this, and I refused to allow him to be so in terms of my introduction and everything and the compliments that I gave him.
Good
and
for you.
I had on this show months ago, kind of a, I wouldn't say a counterpart, but a conservative comms person, and he kind of lamented, yeah, we don't, and he didn't mention Michael by name, but he's basically like, we don't have a Michael Slaby on our team. We don't have that. We're not as good at that as kind of the other side, and we're losing a lot because of that. And this while this work is happening, you guys are going through something that's, you know, just so profound and serious and everything else. I'd kind of love for you to reflect on that time in Chicago, where it's almost like as a husband and wife, you guys are sort of taking turns shining, right? Like you're doing incredible corporate work in Chicago and you're high powered and you're super important. And then Michael's doing this thing. How did you guys sort of deal with that push and pull?
Well, poorly, honestly, at the beginning. So yeah, I graduated from Northwestern's JD MBA program and I went into corporate bankruptcy work as an attorney. Right when
the fun
Michael,
stuff.
Yeah, exactly, the really fun stuff, you know, like the brutal 100-hour week kind of things. And Michael was starting the second Obama campaign, which is a horrific experience. If anybody's ever worked on a presidential campaign, they're just no fun. And you know, so we're both working like crazy. I'm super judgy about his, you know, choice in job because he did the 08 campaign and it almost killed him. And so I was like, I don't understand why you're doing this again. And I wasn't particularly sympathetic. And then he didn't understand why I was spending my brain power and effort and energy on, you know, white collar private sector work. And so we were pretty rough on each other for about a year. And then I was diagnosed with cancer. And so it was like, so we had a moment of, okay, you know, we clearly love each other, even though we're incapable of actually living in the same house right now, but now one of us is super sick. And it's, you know, those moments where a relationship is really tested. And, you know, Michael heard that I called him and I was like, my doctor doesn't know what's wrong with me. And she's sending me to the ER. And he walked out of a meeting, a senior staff meeting on the campaign. It was like, oh, okay. Like now I know where your priorities are. And that is wonderful to see. And so in some respects, even though cancer is horrific and I wouldn't wish it on anyone, in a lot of respects, it gave Michael and I the space to like stop yelling at each other in order to remind ourselves that we actually loved each other in order to let our relationship sort of heal and blossom. That is kind of how the book starts, is at that moment where I was diagnosed with cancer. And it goes from there, you know, getting through cancer and then getting through recovery. And I failed recovery once and then I had to go back into the hospital. And then I figured out how to actually live inside my own skin, which, you know, we're not taught how to live inside our own skins as kids and young adults until we sort of get to that moment where we have to figure it out. And so that's my moment of figuring it out.
So our, you know, upbringing is very similar. You went to our sister school, and I've known you for decades and, you know, and forever. And you're 100% right. It's just get in line, inch forward, do the next thing, and, you know, out into the world you go. And there's no sort of lesson about, you know, learning about yourself, as you kind of alluded to, that period of self-discovery and also like how to balance a checkbook and get a loan for a house. Like nobody taught us that kind of stuff, but damn it, we're good with gerunds and participles, you know, in terms of our writing. But
I want to go mean five paragraph essay. Yeah.
Oh, the keyhole method. We're so good at that. But like, yeah. I want to go into also some of your other experience when it comes to, you know, work in public service and on all different sides of this spectrum, because, you know, Michael's working on a campaign. You work for Senator Patrick in Massachusetts. I'd love for you to go into that experience a little bit in terms of what you found rewarding, what you found frustrating, and otherwise that led you to an even more, as you said, kind of, I don't want to call it empty, because I'm sure they're perfectly happy bankruptcy lawyers in the world, but you know what I mean? Like something that you didn't feel as fulfilled by. I'd love for you to contrast those experiences in Boston and then Chicago.
Oh, happy to. So I started working for Governor Patrick in 2006 when he came in, and I went from the Department of Revenue up into the State House, which was an extraordinary experience. And my particular job there was, I was one of, you know, the late 20 kind of whippersnappers that run around state houses, And I worked specifically for the Secretary of Administration and Finance. She was a she is a remarkable woman named Leslie Kerwin. And, you know, our job was to run state government administration and finance. You know, it's pretty self-explanatory. My particular job in there was for the to oversee the cities and towns. So all of the cities and towns in Massachusetts, you know, have state oversight with their finances and their generalized, you know, work. And when one of them is in trouble, the state comes in and helps them out. So that was my particular job. And it was amazing. It is still by far and away my most favorite kind of professional job other than bartending that I've ever had. I like ran around the state house. I created deals with legislators. I met mayors. I learned a lot at the knees of a really remarkable woman who'd been in, you know, government leadership for a long time. Governor Patrick is an extraordinary man, and just watching how he worked and how he is just so kind and thoughtful and yet strategic was a true lesson in leadership. And I was only there for like a year and a half. And it was amazing because I'd already applied to Northwestern by the time I actually got the job. And so I deferred for a year. And then when Northwestern called me and said, you know, you either have to show up or you have to reapply if you actually want to come. And, you know, I was like, I don't want to go. And I went into my boss and I said, what do I do? And she said, listen, you know, whether or not you actually ever practice law, I will tell you this right now. The two trainings of people that I've ever encountered that are like best suited for problem solving are lawyers and engineers, whether or not they ever actually work as a lawyer or an engineer. And so she was like, if you don't go to school, I'm going to fire you. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? Excuse me. She was like, listen, like I work in a political job. The governor could lose the next election. Like this is not your forever career. So go to school. And, you know, I will always love her for that. And I will always hate her for that. But yeah, I went to school and I learned a lot. And I've had a really extraordinary career out of the end of it. But, you know, it was by far and away my absolute favorite job.
We were talking before the interview started, just kind of about, you know, you have a family situation, you move out of Chicago, all the way to upstate New York, farm. So you went from as fast-paced, big city as you can be to the exact opposite of that. And again, I think it's a plot for a movie. I honestly do. I think it's a screenplay in waiting, and I think you can write it and you can make all the money. But you're up for re-election. You're up for re-election in Rhinebeck, New York. Ms. Libby, please tell me your platform for re-election. What are you running for? Who are you up against? And how are you campaigning? Are you going to all seven or eight doors and stump speeching like it's the 1850s? Tell me about it.
So, yeah. So I left my job as a corporate lawyer and then I wrote this book. And then right when I was about to publish this book, I kind of got a 911 from my sister who lives in Rhinebeck. And so Michael and I, who'd been trying to figure out where we wanted to go after Chicago for a while, and we just couldn't figure out where to go. And then we get this call from Rhinebeck, and we were like, all right, Rhinebeck's pretty. So, you know, we rented our house in Chicago, and we rented a house in Rhinebeck, and off we came. And so the town is 7,500 people. We live in the village, which is about 2,500 people. So, you know, I've been here for 2 years now, helping to take care of my sister, who has some health issues, and you know, ushering my father through his death process, which was horrific and amazing to witness. And, you know, and now I'm working, you know, I hang out with my mom who's here and, you know, retired and doing her own thing. And so like, that's kind of the family side of it. And then, you know, I have all of these skills. I have government administration skills. I have legal skills. I have my MBA. So I have organizational skills, you know, and all of these skills that I have that I really just quantify as problem solving skills. And in a town of 2,500 people, you just meet people, right? Michael joined the volunteer fire department. So that introduced us to a bunch of those guys and they're amazing. A 100% volunteer fire department is a rare and beautiful thing. And then, you know, we met the mayor and we met the local leadership and there was a vacancy for something called a trustee. So the village, yes, exactly. So the village of Rhinebeck is basically run by a mayor as the executive, a 4-member board of trustees on which the mayor sits. So it's actually a 5-member board of trustees. That's kind of the legislature. And then, you know, we elect our judges and all the rest of it. And so there was a trustee vacancy, and I was appointed into the trustee vacancy in October, and now I am running for my seat, and my election is on March 16th. It's very exciting.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what? So who are you up against? Like, are political campaign spending? Are there slush funds? Like, tell me about it.
Well, it was funny because I actually sent out an email to some friends who, you know, we've all worked in the political fundraising world for a bit. And I was like, so this is how much money it costs to run a campaign here. And I was telling them that it costs $5,000 to run a campaign. And a friend of mine wrote back and they said, like, in the first week? So you're trying to raise $5,000 in the first week? And I was like, no, total. And she's like, seriously? And I was like, seriously. And she's like, this is amazing. I need to move to a small town.
There you go.
But yeah, so, you know, there's that side of it. Campaigning is basically, leading in a village like this is basically just being like a good person who communicates well and thinks about everybody, whether or not they voted for them, which I feel like is actually, you know, basic tenets for leadership, sort of no matter how large the community that you're leading. But, you know, we're in the middle of COVID. So how to figure out keeping the businesses alive and outdoor dining and, you know, retail and keeping everybody safe, but yet engaged, how to keep, you know, all of the older folks like safe at home and not depressed and alone and starving to death. You know, there's all sorts of things that we're sort of handling because of COVID. In a non-COVID year, there's environmental issues that small villages are actually really good at handling. We have a lot of, you know, like, how do you salt the roads? Like, how do you use less salt on the roads to make sure that it doesn't go into our water table? How do you make sure that people have clean, safe water? How do you make sure that, you know, a village that is half on a sewer system and half on a septic system actually, you know, function, you know, repaving roads? Like, it's pretty basic, but at the same time, making sure that everybody feels heard and everybody feels understood and everybody is engaged with is a really actually fun process. Surprisingly so for me, who's kind of grumpy and introverted, I've actually ended up really enjoying it.
No, it makes sense because as you said, you're putting together all the skills that you accumulated from these like second and third tier schools like Brown and Harvard and Northwestern to work.
Right.
But like, yeah, it's the real world application of that stuff. Most people don't get to use their education, and you're certainly doing that. Your life experience, you couldn't be better served in kind of these places and solving those problems. Walk me through your balance sheet in terms of, you mentioned it's pandemic and stuff, right? So we know what's happening in terms of people getting sick and hopefully light at the end of the tunnel, vaccines and so on. But we know people might be getting sick, but we also know there also is damage being done by our cure. I'd love for you to kind of walk through that balance sheet for folks in Rhinebeck and then maybe at large, just given your unique health experiences and everything that you've kind of gone through.
It's been really tough, right? How to keep people safe, but yet the economy moving. And, you know, I get it. Back in March and April of last year, you know, we didn't know anything about the virus. Right. And so kind of shutting everything down seemed like the safest way to approach it. I do think that what we're doing now with sort of partial opening, being really strict on masks, you know, I mean, it's amazing how much the numbers have plummeted since Biden took office simply by enforcing mask rules. It's hard. I completely understand why the country shut down, and frankly, why the whole world shut down last March and April, because we didn't know enough about the disease at that point to really know what we could do safely. But now that we know that generally, if you are appropriately masked and you're appropriately distanced, there are things that businesses and communities can do to keep people engaged and to keep businesses functioning and to keep the economy moving. So, you know, what we've done is we've expanded our outdoor dining rules. We've suspended a bunch of zoning laws. When we don't have a whole pile of snow on the ground, we bring in jersey barriers and we've, you know, blocked off a lot of sort of on-street parking and allowed for those spaces to be used for restaurants and for retail, for outdoor racks and things like that. And that's been really successful, mostly just because it brings people to the area. And, you know, if they then sort of buy themselves a coffee and go off to the park and have a nice little socially distanced picnic, then like, great. It just gets people out of their house and it gets sort of money flowing again. The one big concern, though, has been the people who haven't been able to work and the people who've been really economically damaged by this. And so we've you know, we've got our food pantry has been busier than ever. And luckily the generosity of people donating to the food pantry has gone up. And so there's been, in some respects, sort of this beautiful moment of human caregiving that I think we don't often see, much to our species detriment, to be perfectly honest, where, you know, those who have are really stepping up to help those who have not, and those who have not are, you know, asking and receiving in a really beautiful sort of circle of reciprocity. And that's been wonderful to see. And I think it's easier in some respects in smaller communities where everybody knows each other. And so everybody knows, you know, if Mrs. Jones down the street isn't being taken care of, or if Mr. Smith, you know, up the block, you know, needs a hand, it gives all of us an opportunity to feel useful. And I do think that humans do strive for moments of feeling useful. And so as hard as this has been, I've seen a lot of really wonderful, wonderful things that have come out of it.
I ask this of everybody, so I want you to take your time, think about it. Give me a career highlight. Give me a moment where you're like, I'm pretty awesome. Maybe it's a touchdown. Maybe it's like an end zone spike. Maybe you get a taunting penalty, point in somebody's face, like you let them know that you gave them the business. And then give me a career low light. Give me a moment of what have I done?
Oh, boy. So career highlight, you're going to laugh because it's just so my personality. But I... in front of Governor Patrick with his chief of staff for half an hour until I was like blue in the face to get Governor Patrick to do his very first veto. I was 28 or 29 and his chief of staff, you know, was older and more experienced. And I won that argument, and Governor Patrick did his first veto and it was promptly overruled by the legislature. But like, we put our like toe in the sand and it just, it was awesome.
So on brand for you. That's so on brand.
Perfect. Right? Yeah, exactly. But it was just so amazing to have that experience of like my brain just caused really smart people to move in the direction that I was hoping that they would go in. And it was amazing. Low light, I was fired from my first professional job for basically being mouthy. So like for the same exact personality reasons.
Again, so, perfectly on brand. Amazing. Right.
So like the same personality trait got me the highest and the lowest. I think that's kind of amazing. I never thought about it that way until right now. I was fired from my very first job.
That's perfect. And I actually showed this to the teacher, but I had to write 100 lines once for Mr. Hatch in sixth grade. I'm not as funny as I think I am. And I said, I'm keeping this. And I showed it to him at my 20th reunion. I said, look, I make my living talking and being funny. There you go. And we shared a good chuckle about that. Lydia, this was awesome. It was great to catch up. Congrats on everything. So happy for you. So happy for your husband. Even though he's a real jerk, it's still really cool to see what you guys have accomplished and what you're doing. And good luck. I know you're up for your election. It's going to be a hotly contested election. But I have confidence that you will be a trustee in Rhinebeck once again. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Danny, for having me.
Thank you to my guest, Lydia Slaby. So by the time this episode is released, I think we'll know the results of that election, unless they do kind of a hand counting thing in the county barn there in Rhinebeck. So I will circle back and find out the results of the election. And I will certainly keep you listeners who I know are on the edge of your seat updated on that. I hope Lydia certainly wins that. It's really cool that I know an elected official. Hopefully, again, she's up for re-election. But so many things to pull out of that conversation. And I don't really think I've done this justice, her story. Check out LydiaSlaby.com. Go there first. It's, you know, it's her website, and she'll walk you through some of these things. And even again, as we sort of talk about them so matter-of-factly, I just kind of shake my head and marvel at her courage and grace going through some things that are just so challenging. I mean, think about this in your own life, right? How many times have you gotten, you know, negative news or been down or had kind of a bad couple of days or week or month or whatever, right? Where it just kind of seems you're on team can't get right, it's not going your way, et cetera, right? Well, here's Lydia that's got that plus a, you know, an Acme 2,000-pound anvil weighing down the scale. And not only does she fight back, but she succeeds and sort of owns it and makes it her strength. And just turning that on its head is just such a marvelous thing. And then, you know, obviously don't want to get too personal and into the weeds and in somebody else's business, but they're trying to decide what to do. And it's a, a fairly serious health situation for another member of her family. So boom, now that decides our next step. So instead of just sort of, again, wallowing in it, I'll just run for public office where I can, you know, sort of use my skill set and do the most good. This is someone with like a billion degrees who could write their own ticket, has worked in public office, has worked in as a corporate attorney, as an author. So like sort of name your own adventure, whatever you'd like to do. I couldn't call most companies and have them say, sure, we'd love to have you. They'd say, who are you? How did you get past security? What are you doing? Please go away. Lydia wouldn't have that problem. And that's pretty amazing. And again, this is where she's sort of applying her skills in trade and sort of doing this on a micro scale. She mentioned Michael is in the volunteer fire department. This is one of the guys that, again, is on probably a top 10 list of helping to get President Obama elected. And part of this giant sort of new wave of technology that's now become ubiquitous and has changed the way we do engagement and elections and turnout and everything else. And he's a volunteer fireman in Rhinebeck, New York. Just what you do now, right? It's just amazing how these two, you know, work together and tackle these new projects and whatever challenges kind of come their way, et cetera. And Michael's now, you know, just furiously going around doing stuff to promote his book, For All the People, which I'm, you know, probably about 50, 60 pages in. And it's great. He's just so brilliant. And both of them together are just are awesome. They're superstars. But so congratulations to them as a couple. And I do think it was kind of funny how just so we started this off where Lydia had done this very personal book, right? And this journey, you know, that she had been on it and sort of chronicling it and confronting it. And I can't imagine it was the easiest experience. I'm sure it was cathartic in a way once she got rolling doing it. But she's gone through this, right? Where you sit at the bookstore and you get interviewed about it on the local this and you talk to your buddy from high school about that. And you go through this entire process and she's probably just watching, laughing and just cackling as Michael stresses out as type A and you know, and wanting to achieve as he is, watching him do that. I just think that's a pretty unique dynamic, right? Where you've got the husband and wife team of high-powered superstars, and so they're each taking turns going through the stress ringer right there, and I just think that dynamic is really funny. But so that's awesome. That's going to do it for us here this week. Thanks again to Lydia Slaby and her husband Michael. Quite frankly, it was cool of them to throw their weight behind this little podcast here for a couple of weeks. And thank you, you guys, as well for checking us out. Remember @interest_pod on the Twitterverse, @UseumInteresting on Instagram. We are trying to post things to promote and all sorts of other stuff. Tweet us. Let us know if you guys have some good guest ideas, folks that you would want to hear. We're trying to track some cool folks down for you to keep these episodes rolling right along. Patreon.com/FunnyDanny, of course, as always, you want to go and support the show, and I welcome messaging there as well. Folks you'd like to hear, things you would like discussed, written about, etc. I always welcome those kinds of ideas. And if you're listening to us on free platforms, whether it's Amazon Music, Google Play, Apple Pods, all of the good stuff, we appreciate it. Any stars, reviews, nice stuff you want to say about us is always very welcome. Help us get noticed and keep this machine rolling. Thank you to my producer, Andrew Russell, as well. Kawanda Sound, kawandasound.com for all those sound editing needs. Until next time, all of you, seem interesting.